Gudiños en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González, Orlando, La Torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas. Chale, Mifrin y Cubillas y el gran Perico León. Bailón y Alberto Gallardo completan.
Welcome back to the Peruvian Waltz Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Galindo, and joining me is, quite frankly, maybe the best group we could have asked for on an episode like tonight. First of all, we've got Renato Vilches. Renato, how are you doing?
I wish I could be saying good, but after the past few days, I think you can tell how I feel right now.
Yeah, the exasperated gasping, I think, said it all there. We've also got Kevin Montalvan back with us. Kevin, how are you doing?
Doing well, Peter. I think, after having a day to relax, to cool off, I think we're all ready for this pod.
Yes, and that's why we usually now wait until the day after so that we have a little bit of time to calm down. We get all our thoughts out in our WhatsApp groups and kind of ease our nerves that way. And also returning, a long time coming, glad to have him back, the second half of the Montalvan duo, Diego Montalvan. Diego, how are you doing?
Hey, Peter. Hey, Renato. Hey, Kevin. How's everyone doing? I'm glad to be back. It's been a long time. I'm sorry. You know, I've been busy, I guess. And I'm just glad to be here to be able to dissect a little bit more into what's going on in La Selección and you know, the key points of what's happened and what's to come.
Absolutely. Let's not try to waste any more time because I'm sure the listeners are going to want to hear a lot about what happened. So we're going to break down this, quite frankly, disastrous five-day period in both games. So we'll split it up into sections in that way. We'll start first with the loss to Chile, a 2-0 defeat. Arturo Vidal scoring twice in the span of about 15 minutes. Really out of nowhere because, quite frankly, Peru had actually, I wouldn't say that they deserved to go down 2-0, but I also don't think they did enough to exploit Chile's weaknesses, and there were plenty of them. And along with the Paraguay draw for this reason, guys, I feel like this was probably an opportunity lost for 3 points. But the big headline from the game was Gareca choosing to withdraw Pedro Aquino after 38 minutes for Christian Cueva, who he initially dropped for Aquino just hours before the match. Renato, I'll start with you on this one. How much did that decision affect the outcome of the match?
I think this had a huge impact, especially because when you change that system where we have no playmaker, and that's arguably possibly Peru's biggest trademark of position, we just have problems with connecting the passes well, and it just becomes all over the place. You can argue that maybe there's a few reasons why Gareca wanted that change, because maybe he also wanted Ruidíaz to be accommodated more, or maybe he was possibly fearing that Chile's midfield would possibly want to press very highly since they're very physical base and they're very defensive mind midfielders. But unfortunately, it didn't work. Pedro Aquino was not really in the best form of it, and Ruidíaz also was in that new, even no matter what system you can put him, it's just another disappointing performance from him. It's just not fun anymore.
Kevin, do you feel like that decision from Gareca as a whole affected the fact that Peru just couldn't really get themselves into the game in the first half, at least?
Honestly, I kind of suspected we'd be using the 4-3-3 as our away formation. So I think he may have been trying to play mind games with Chile by having Cueva in the last training prior to the match. As far as if it negatively impacted, I don't know if that would be the main thing. I think the level of play from the guys and I feel like the lack of leadership were much bigger in this match.
Diego, what about you? Do you feel like that decision alone really affected the majority of what we saw transpire on Friday?
No, I gotta say that the decision alone didn't. I don't think had to do with the loss. I think it's more on the players. Gareca said himself after his thought process was the 4-3-3, we'd get to pressure them, we'd get to try to pressure them in their own half and try to steal the ball and try to get a chance to score. that didn't happen. But it didn't happen because of him. It just happened because the players were so off form, or many of them were. And then there was just no cohesion. There was no the collectiveness was not there. They couldn't string together 2 to 3 passes, and that's something that's rare for Peru. So I think it was more on them. And once he realized that there was nothing else that could be done, because Chile, let's be honest, Chile wasn't great either. You know, if we would have been in form, or we would have played like we played against Brazil, I think it would have been a whole different ballgame. But we were just off form. Chile was just that bit better, or at least Arturo Vidal was that much better. And so that's what happened. He realized that he needed to change things up once it was 2-0, but the damage was done. And a lot of the players just couldn't get it together.
Yeah, I will give credit to Gareca in that he does recognize his mistakes right away and does try to fix them. And then, typically speaking, it doesn't happen again. And I think we saw that with the team selection against Argentina, at least on paper. But certainly after the 36-minute mark, when he eventually brought in Cueva, you could see, like, all right, this clearly isn't working out. I'm relaying all these instructions to the players. Either they're not listening or they're just not able to do it, one of the two. We'll probably talk more about those specific issues later. You can't say it didn't affect things, but I feel like to entirely pin it on that one decision would be a bit unfair. Did Peru's play improve once Cueva came on? Absolutely it did. I feel like everybody improved tenfold. But then eventually Chile kind of just sat back. They tried to close down the spaces. And then from that point on, Peru couldn't really get anything through into the box. And when they did, someone was there to snuff it out. Diego, you mentioned Vidal there and how obviously integral he was yet again for Chile. It seems like no matter how good or bad his form is with his club, he ends up delivering for Chile, at least for the most part, when it matters the most. Was there anything Gareca could have done tactically to perhaps contain Arturo Vidal a bit better? Nothing you could probably do about the first goal, because that's just like a 1 in 1 million strike. But maybe the second goal, where he just kind of floated in behind and just so easily got his foot to the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that was more defensively. But that's something that is worrying, because defensively, we are not there no more. I've talked to some people, and some people have told me that the confidence has been lost from the players and Gareca right now. They can't seem to get away out of their heads. To me, it's got to be more mentally. I think a lot of the players and a lot of the fans thought that Peru was much better than what they actually are. And let me say what I mean by that is that, yeah, they made it to the World Cup. Yeah, they made it to the final of Copa America. But they didn't make it by a lot of individual actions. It was the collective group that played well. If you look at Chile and you look at a couple of other teams, you can find one or two star players. Who would you say is a star player on Peru right now? There's no one, right? So yeah, like you said, that first strike was one in a million, and then that second one is just the defense. The defense fell apart. Yeah, a little lucky on the bounce as well, but you know, we have to be positioned better, and I think that's where Gareca also gets it wrong in the next game.
This game was also kind of symbolic in a way, because it might have represented I don't maybe want to call it changing of the guard, because that implies that one person really held that honor with distinction and is now passing the baton on to someone who he knows is going to carry it forward. This isn't really the case with Rui Diaz from a national team perspective as the number 9, passing it on to Gianluca Lapadula, who obviously debuted in this match, coming on just after the hour mark. But it might have actually marked the end, the likely end at least, of Rui Diaz's time as a starter for Peru, at least in the next few games. Firstly, Kevin, what did you think of Lapadula's cameo against Chile specifically? And then second, would you agree that this is probably the end of Rui Diaz becoming that number one option, regardless of what the situation might be, unless, you know, he's like, say, the only in-form number 9 left available to start?
Okay, so Peter, what I'm going to say, I'm going to answer your question, but first I want to talk a little bit about Rui Diaz's performance during that match.
Okay.
Honestly, I think that was a pretty decent performance from Rui Diaz compared to previous matches. He was actually participating in plays. You saw him actually drop back to try to at least get a touch on the ball so he's not on an island. I don't think it amounted to too much. And he showed up on the counters when Peru was there, but it wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. Clearly, he missed. Yep. It's something that I – like, if I saw him in a Seattle jersey, I know he would have scored that.
Yeah, or a Memphis jersey.
Considering that, to me, that was probably his best performance in a while, and it just wasn't enough. It just wasn't enough. La Padula came in, and I'm obviously he comes in with a little bit of hype, but I think he managed to put in a good shift. He opened up space. He made some creative runs to get into dangerous positions. So I'm going to rate that as a decent debut for La Padula. And I think La Padula does much more in the Argentina match. So that will probably be the end of Rui Diaz's starts going forward.
Honestly, completely agree with you on everything you said. I feel bad for Rui Diaz when things like that happen because he misses that chance just before halftime. I mean, Claudio Bravo, you have to give him credit. He comes out, and if you actually watch that instance back, basically as soon as Rui Diaz has an opportunity to shoot, Bravo is almost right in his face. And unfortunately for him, Bravo's foot gets to the ball, and literally if Bravo misses that chance, it probably goes into the back of the net, and then we're having a completely different conversation probably. But yeah, I agree. I think Rui Diaz, considering what happened prior to this game, did have one of his better performances in a while. I don't think it's a coincidence that it happened largely after Cueva came on the pitch, because Cueva's that guy who's going to be able to filter in those through balls, which is exactly how Rui Diaz wants that service to come. And the same thing happened with La Padula. But again, once Chile sat back and made very little space available for those through balls, it wasn't, you know, it didn't matter if anybody was on the pitch, it would have been difficult for anybody to score. So that's personally how I felt about the whole thing. Now, Renato, I'll let you talk about this a little bit because I know that you've been, you were previously kind of cold on La Padula before he committed. Now you seem to be turning around, which I think a lot of us are. And you also might be a little bit, I don't want to say annoyed or fed up, but you're probably thinking now is the time for Rui Diaz maybe to step aside because he's clearly void of confidence in a national team setting. What do you think about the potential change here?
So before I say much, I first want to go over on Rui Diaz's performance. I got to agree with Kevin. I think this has been one of the better performances of Rui Diaz in the national team. Because I felt like he was getting, since ever when Cueva got in, he was trying his best to emulate what a number nine should be. But at the same time, that miss was just terrible, honestly. It's got to be like possible. Like, I just felt like a shadow of the Rui Diaz you saw at the club level. And it just goes to show you that club level form is just not always transferable over to the international form. And I gotta say, I just feel bad for Rui Diaz because I think he's a great player for Sounders, but he just really doesn't work for us. And if he's not working, then time for the next man up. And that's where La Padula comes in. And honestly, I think going from Rui Diaz to La Padula felt like a breath of fresh air because one of the reasons why Rui Diaz gets so much smack with Bidu is not because he doesn't score. It's because he doesn't get involved in the game. Rui Diaz is a type of striker that needs the ball just put on him. But he's not going to make the runs or they try to get involved throughout the pitch. La Padula, on the other hand, he'll try to find connected passes or even make smart runs in order to wait for one of the wingers in the midfield to pass in the ball and just shoot. So I feel like maybe a transition from Rui Diaz to La Padula can honestly be beneficial for us, especially also after seeing his performance against Argentina, which I'll go over at some point.
We will definitely go over that at some point. But just before we do, I'm going to close it out with this, at least on this section. Thoughts on the Abraham Araujo partnership from you, Diego? This was obviously the first of the two partnerships that we saw in the center of defense. I didn't think they actually performed all that poorly. I think really on the second Vidal goal, you kind of saw just discombobulation everywhere. overall, I didn't think that it was actually that bad of a performance from both of them, at least as a duo. Would you agree with that, or do you think that they maybe left something to be desired?
No, I agree. I agree with what you just said. I think as a whole, the defense was just bad. I feel like there hasn't been balance in a while. And I also think that, you know, I feel like a lot of people were talking a lot about Miguel Araujo, but I feel like Miguel Araujo, if I had to say who played better out of the two center backs, I thought Miguel Araujo did better than Abraham.
Yeah.
I think he blocked a lot more shots. He was always putting his body on the line. But what I mean by balance is I feel like having two attacking fullbacks is tough to handle especially when you're out of form like we are right now. I'll get into that for the Argentina game as well.
Yeah, well, let's get right into it now, just because I feel like that was the most recent game, obviously, mm-hmm. and this is what's kind of led to our, I think, big picture conversation that we'll have to close out the show. But obviously, Peru losing that game, it's their third consecutive loss. That's the first time. I actually had to check this because I thought it may have happened earlier, but it did not. It's the first time Peru have lost three consecutive matches in the Gareca era. This was, again, a 2-0 defeat. It was against Argentina, who Gareca still hasn't beaten as Peru coach, the only team in Conmebol he has yet to defeat, ironically his birth nation. Peru, since the Copa America final, including the final itself, has now 1 win, 2 draws, and 7 losses in their last 10 games in all competitions. That includes friendlies. That lone win actually ironically came against Brazil in that September 2019 friendly, but it's, I feel, by far the worst run of form Peru's experience under Gareca. We'll again talk more about that later. The goals were scored by Nicolas Gonzalez in the 17th minute. 11 minutes later, Lautaro Martinez doubled the lead just before the half hour mark. Peru is now joint bottom of the table with Bolivia, who really should have beaten Paraguay earlier that day. They were very close to doing so, and what would have ended like, what, a 49-50 plus match winless run away from home. But in this game, guys, Gareca once again raised a few eyebrows with the selection, because he made 4 changes for this game. I think the ones that were the most influential, given how the match played out, were probably Aldo Corso and Anderson Santamaria coming in for Luis Advíncula and Miguel Araujo, respectively. On paper, for me at least, Corso for Advíncula made sense. The Santamaria-Araujo swap didn't as much. Diego, I'll start with you on this because you kind of wanted to transition to the defense as a whole. Do you think we saw why Advíncula has started as much as he has, despite his patchy form in Spain for the past 12 to 18 months, given how easily exploited Aldo Corso was on the dribble against Argentina?
Yes and no. like you said, Aldo Corso was exposed on the dribble. But the good thing about that, I guess, is that we saw Cueva tracking back, Carrillo and La Padula tracking back, which I thought was great. But the thing is, for me, like I said, the defense as a whole is still not coherent. I don't know if we're lacking a leader back there that talks more, that can yell at them. But for me, I think Corso coming in was okay. Right. I feel like he did decent. Yeah. But I think the problem was you couldn't change Advíncula and Araujo for Corso and Santamaria, two of the players on the right side that haven't been playing as much with Peru.
Right.
That's what I felt. I felt like if anything, you should have started Corso and started Araujo, and that way a little bit more balanced. But I felt like Santamaria was just off. He looked lost, many times leaving a lot of space, couldn't track back. It was just, to me, I didn't understand. But back to Advíncula, I think, you know, he realized that Advíncula needed to come in at some point, because Corso, unfortunately, I think is one of the players that can only do so much for you. And I think his time has passed.
To Corso's credit, and I guess perhaps for the entire team's credit, once he, and it was strange because for the first like 20, 25, maybe even 30 minutes of that game, he was still pushing up high quite a bit. And he does that for Lau very often. But with the national team, you didn't see that as much, at least when he was in form and he was regularly starting. I feel like when that was happening, I mean, Lo Celso and Gonzalez were just running circles around him so easily. And as soon as they realized, oh, we can just easily run right past him, they did it and it was so easy. And then at that point, Santa Maria is like, crap, I got to go over there and cover for him. That opens up more space. And that's why I thought, at least for the beginning, Santa Maria deserved a bit of a leeway. But then even once Corso dropped back, Santa Maria was still all over the place. And it kind of added validity to my reservations for him starting, in that he hasn't played really at all. But I think overall, I agree with you, Diego. Switching out two of the defenders on the right side, especially given that that was going to be an area to watch anyways, was quite risky. Kevin, would you agree that switching both of them was a bit of a ballsy call from Gareca to do, and that ultimately kind of cost them defensively?
I think it was excessive. We seem to be changing up our defense. A little bit of it's through bad luck, a little bit of it's some poor performances. I think it was more necessary to change Advíncula, because I, in the a previous pod, I said if Advíncula can't figure it out, because he's been kind of singled out as one of the weak points of the defense, then a change would probably have to be made. So I understood Corso. Santa Maria I found more questionable. Like you said, he came from a serious injury in the beginning of the year and had maybe one match in the league, maybe a little bit of minutes in a Copa match in Mexico. And I think that's it. I think it really showed in the first half, because Santa Maria and Corso were just sloppy. Santa Maria did have a better second half. Hopefully between now and March, he'll have some actual game time, and he'll be in better form if he were to start in the Bolivia match.
Renato, I'll throw a kind of simple in its wording, but it's a bit complicated possibly to answer, because Peru has now conceded, what, 10 goals in the four qualifiers? I think in terms of non-penalty expected goals, so you take away the two penalties that Brazil had in that game, Peru, and it is a small sample size, I get it, but it is kind of backing up just how many big chances they're conceding. Peru has conceded 1.71 non-penalty expected goals against per 90 minutes in the four games so far. To kind of compare that, from 2016 to the end of the last qualifying cycle, until that Colombia match, Peru was conceding about 1.1 expected goals against non-penalty. So it's gone up pretty dramatically in those four games. Do you feel like it's the players that are kind of causing this, or is it the system breaking down around them as a whole?
I do agree it's a pretty complicated question to answer, but I've been noticing a lot of these goals have been coming from the right side of the field. And it shows when you got Advíncula and Corso, who are, let's be honest, have not been the best options for us as a recent, because and it's also bad because, like, even they have, with their characteristics, you just wish they had the best of both, but unfortunately they do not. Advíncula leaves so many defensive gaps open, yet he has the attacking aspects. You also got Corso, who, well, can offer you a bit more defensively. He's very slow, and if you noticed during the Argentina game, Giovanni Lo Celso was eating up Corso, like sending back to preschool, which ended up making Argentina like lead first. So I feel like maybe it has to do with something with our defense, because I just feel like there's really, now at this point, there's no set of partners, since Zambrano's going to be out for until at least one more game. So even so, it's still a complicated question to answer, but I feel like maybe mostly the players themselves out of form.
Yeah, probably the easiest answer to go with, and quite a bit of truth to it as well. Guys, maybe on a broader scale, part of the reason why we're seeing so many defensive breakdowns and just in general a calamitous defense could be the performance of the midfield, specifically in these two games. Now, really the entire qualifying cycle so far, I feel they haven't really been that convincing, maybe apart from Pedro Aquino in those first two matches. But despite Christian Cueva's return to the 11 against Argentina, which was triggered by Tapia's suspension, the midfield was still a bit of a mess. And that could be seen through the second goal, where the Argentinian midfield are just making simple runs past the Peruvian midfield as they're pushing up all at once, all in chaotic fashion. And then in doing that, you see Anderson Santa Maria, who is obviously not in sync with everybody and hasn't played for a while. He pushes up to play the offside trap. No one else is doing it. And then Martinez has a run straight through on goal. What is going on with the midfield in general, Renato? And specifically with Yoshimar Dotun, because I feel like he is the one who has really been the biggest letdown. And when you consider how vital he is for Peru, when he is clicking, when he is in form, it's even more detrimental for the team that he does not show up, or at the very least plays like this.
It's simple to say. Unfortunately, Yoshimar Yotun is out of form. It's bad news considering how he's supposed to be the bridge of the midfield, but I've been noticing he doesn't want to get involved. His passings has been sloppy, which is very bad, considering that Yotun is known for his creative passes and also like his dynamism, which I feel like has been fading away. Part of me feels like it has to do with the fact that he's been getting quite injured a lot recently, which possibly is hurting him in his form a bit. But when you're supposed to be our leader in midfield and you're not working, then our midfield's in trouble. Not even Tapia or Aquino is enough for that.
I guess it doesn't look like it. Kevin, we saw against Chile that Yotun, at least in the first half, was just really not running all that much to close down open space. And then when he did start running, he was kind of all over the place. And then against Argentina, none of the midfielders were really that involved at all on the ball. And you can kind of understand why if they're trying to play on the counterattack. But even still, really not a whole lot of impact from them really thus far. So how would you assess the performance of the midfield, not just against Argentina and Chile as well, but just in the last 30, 31 days?
Of this, the last two matches, I think the biggest letdown for me was Pedro Aquino. It's a unique situation where, you know, in the first half against Chile, I think the entire midfield was disconnected, but Aquino was just so out of it. Then you have Vidal's first goal come from him being I don't know where. Then he gets subbed out in like the 38th minute, something Gareca never does. So you got to imagine that probably killed his confidence going into the Argentina match. And I don't think he would have started if it wasn't for the fact that Tapia and Canchita both got suspended after getting yellow cards in that match. I think that's going to be one of the biggest things to see him get back into the groove of things, because I think that 4-3-3 had serious potential. As far as Yotun, you know, sometimes it doesn't work. So without Cueva on the field, I think the other team already knew Yotun was the man to mark. That complicates the game a little bit more for us. And with Aquino out of form, it felt like Yotun was on an island.
Diego, what would you make of the current situation of our midfield at this point in time?
Well, I mean, similar to what the guy said, I think a lot of players are just in horrendous form. You know, like we mentioned, Aquino, Flores to me too also was ridiculously off. I didn't see anything from him, and I think with all that, it affects Yotun, because if your midfield partner, you can't play with them, or, you know, usually everyone talks about our left side being one of the best technically and how they play with the ball. Trauco, Flores, Yotun, it just wasn't there. And so, and then, yeah, like Kevin said, Cueva wasn't there to filter the pass through to him, to open it up and go forward. It's just, it was all hard. But again, a lot of these guys are just really off form, and at some point, you know, either they step it up, or Gareca has to say, "All right, I gotta bench you guys. I gotta, you know, if you're not good enough right now, then we gotta do something, because we need to change something. You know, it doesn't work the same as it used to, and that's because, well, one, not all of those individuals are there that were part of the team through injury or whatever it may be. Two, they're not all at the same level right now, as I said, off form. And I feel like there's a lack of leadership inside the game.
We'll kind of maybe get into one of those obviously the biggest, I think, leader missing from the team in a bit, because we got quite a few questions about that from the listeners. But Diego, you mentioned the performances of Edison Flores, who has really either been invisible or when he was involved, he was making some poor decisions. There were some sloppy touches. We did see Lapadula make his full debut, and obviously Christian Cueva comes in to form a 4-2-3-1. And there were parts of the front four that actually looked really good together. Like, I thought Lapadula was doing well dropping deep and getting involved and making proper runs. Him and Cueva seemed to be linking up decently well already. Carrillo was electric, but it didn't look like he was really connecting with the other members of the front line. So what did you make of that front four? And do you think that it's maybe a case of which, obviously, Lapadula mentioned after he answered your question, Diego, that it, maybe time will help, and that it's just not an easy moment at this point in time? Is it as simple as that, or do you feel like there are elements of that front four that might not work well together?
Well, first of all, thanks for throwing that out there. Yes, he did answer my question. There are elements, you know, obviously there are at least out of the four, three of them have played together for a while now, so they should know how to play together and all that. But again, like I said, it's still, they're off form. It's just that. But the only one that's really in form right now is Carrillo. But like you said, it was just tough for him to associate with other players at times. There were many times where he would make the run and there wouldn't be someone to follow with him or to be able to play with him. And I think a lot of people talked about that and said that, you know, that in Peru, there's Argolla, that they didn't want to pass the Lapadula. I honestly didn't see that. I saw the match again today, and I saw that Lapadula got 9 passes into attacking positions. So, I mean, 9 passes in a game, I think, is a pretty decent chance. It's just, like I said, we're off form. A lot of players make a pass, then they don't make the run or just overthink it, or just don't make the pass at the right time, or hold on to the ball too long. And that's what's happening. I think this four right now that played against Argentina, it will work. It's just a matter of these guys getting back into form, and obviously Lapadula coming back and training with the guys some more, and them adjusting to his runs, adjusting to the way he plays, as well as vice versa. And then obviously Farfán would be back by then. And then a little bit after Guerrero. So all that will help. It's just, I think the best thing that could happen for Peru right now is this break from international play right now.
Diego, you talked about, obviously, maybe some leadership lacking. Obviously, one reason why it's lacking is Paulo Guerrero. He isn't there and won't be back until probably about March or April at the earliest. So Kevin, I'll throw this to you, because we got a question from Christian at @slow_x. How valuable is Paolo to the team as a player and as a leader after watching these matches without him?
Paolo has been a key player for Peru for, I don't know, at least a decade, maybe. He's definitely the dude that'll be yelling at the players. You have memes, you have a bunch of stuff. Guerrero is always the dude to make sure that people are getting back into the game. Especially when if we take an early goal, you always see him fight back to try to get one in. So he's always been a key player for Peru. I think that a leadership thing is very big right now. I think it's what we're completely lacking. You know, we saw Advíncula as a captain in Chile, and he's probably one of our worst performing players at the moment. Then we saw Flores, and honestly, this has been a bad year for Flores. So I don't even want to say that he shouldn't have been captain. I think that was too much responsibility for him in this one.
I was going to say that it just hasn't been good. Like, he's got injured. He's had a bad manager at DC United. And if you compare that to last year where Flores was on fire, I feel like I'm watching a different Flores right now.
Renato, I'll throw this at you, because we got a question from a listener related to Paolo as well as Lapadula, from Luis at @chato_Luis_305. Would Guerrero and Lapadula make a good starting duo for the next two must-win games? Assuming Paolo is back, which I don't think we really necessarily know yet, do you think those two could work together, or do you feel like it has to be one or the other?
That really depends if you want to also change the system, because the system change would also have to be necessary. In general, if they both of them could work together, you know, it's like a teacher and the student. Like, if you have both of them together, Lapadula will learn a lot, and Paul will be able to be the teacher.
The only thing I would say to that, Renato, is that Lapadula is 30. You know, there's not much that he can learn. I guess learn maybe the way that our players play, but I don't know if he's going to learn a lot.
That's true. But I will say this on Lapadula. During the Argentina game, I've been noticing that if besides like the passes, you saw of him, if his involvement throughout the game, you saw him like not just doing like any attack, but he was also trying to get himself in the midfield, even defending against some of the strikers of Argentina, which for like a strike, like someone that isn't Paolo, that's a breath of fresh air.
Also notable, and maybe a bit sad in a way too, that Lapadula, the man who was literally making his full debut, was the one who was kind of rallying the players after they conceded the goals, being like, you know, come on, vamos, you know, like just kind of trying to get the players up off the ground. It's like, as soon as they conceded, their heads dropped and that was it. And that might be part of the problem, I guess, with why they're experiencing these issues. But maybe a potential other problem, guys, obviously the situation politically in Peru. We got a question about that from Wonderkid at GB_Vargas10 asking us, do you think the political situation may have had an effect on the team's morale before the matches? Kevin, do you think that there's any validity to that, or is it just something that might just be a convenient excuse?
No, I want to stick to football. I don't think, I mean, obviously it's something on people's mind. It was a big issue, but honestly, it's happened to several countries in Latin America. Chile had their own protests. I'm hearing Colombia right now has having protests. And I think these guys are, their whole system, you know, obviously they're in a bubble for the protocols, but already, aside from if there was a pandemic, they're staying together, they're working all that out, they have psychiatrists. I think low performance in football is I think strictly because of the footballing side.
Let me say one thing to that. I have to disagree a little bit with my brother there, because I spoke with some of the players. I can tell you at least one of them told me, man, you know, my family, a lot of people hitting me up. You know, obviously we all saw through social media how everyone demanded that the players speak up about the situation that was going on in Peru. I'll say first thing first is that the players don't need to say anything. It was nice of them and great that they said something because they're Peruvian. But then, you know, all their family, all the people telling, oh, post this, please, you know, retweet this or post this, or the people missing, or that plays a little bit of a role. Obviously, they're professionals and they should be able to switch that, but they're also humans. And sometimes that's easier said than done.
Something Gareca said in a press conference is what he said best, if I can reiterate that, is that the players, they're here to play. They're here to win or lose or draw for the national team. Anything that happens beyond that is behind the scenes.
And that is very true. But yeah, I think there's validity to both of those. I mean, obviously, it's going to weigh on a player's mind. It's going to weigh on anybody's mind if, you know, your freaking country's in political disarray, right? I think anybody would, heck, I mean, we have Americans on the show. Like, come on. You know, the entire week the election was happening, I'm sure everybody Absolutely. Was on pins and needles, right? So, but again, we're not professional athletes, so I feel like it's a bit different. But, I mean, sure, of course, it's going to be on your mind heading into a game, after the game, what have you. So it might have a little bit of an effect. But to maybe entirely put it down to that, you know, especially considering the fact that both games were just so dour, I feel like it had to just be more than that. If it was like a little bit missing, yeah, possibly. Let's shift over towards the big picture, guys, because this is, I think, going to be the majority of the show's, I guess, theme. Because, you know, one thing that, you know, I will give the Peruvian Waltz credit for is, you know, when it's time for people to move on, or they're just too busy, or, you know, I guess in certain cases they're out of form, which, you know, no one has ever been out of form. I'm just using that to kind of tie these two together. People have replacements to kind of filter in and to keep the momentum going and to keep the quality going. Unfortunately, this hasn't happened for the Peruvian national team, because, as I said, this is undoubtedly Peru's worst run of form under Gareca. He did take responsibility for the defeat after the Argentina game and said that their performances are justification to essentially analyze all options to fix this. So, Renato, is it time to accelerate the process of bringing in fresh faces to the national team before the Copa America next summer, which I think Gareca was planning on doing anyway? Is it time essentially for new blood to come in, something Gareca didn't do in previous friendlies?
I believe it's time to at least give like new faces in the areas that we desperately need right now. I'm not saying give Peru a total reboot, because you still need some experience or someone to lead the way in. But there are some, there are the areas where that like improvement or new fresh blood is needed, like the right back, the midfield, someone, a proper partner for Abraham, because if there's no Zambrano, I don't know who else can really partner up with Abraham aside from maybe Gianfranco Chavez, which I hope he can get called up. And also maybe even like the left wing, or because Flores has not been performing as of recent. But this is also something I was just very disappointed with last year's friendlies, because the thing was that Gareca never tested out any new players last time. As I said, the right back has been bad because there's out of form of Vincula, and with all due respect to Aldo Corso, he's not been the best of it, and I feel like it's even time to give Gleyber Aguilar a chance. And I know some people could say it's too early to give the chance, but look at some of the national teams. Even if they are young, if they're ready, you got to throw them in. Like, look at Ecuador, Moises Caicedo. He's been outstanding. He feels like a breath of fresh air in the midfield, which has arguably been an area of Ecuador's problems before, but now it's been improved. Or look at me in Brazil. Like, yes, I know it might be a bit of an extreme example since Brazil's talent is all the talent, but they know how to transition well from like old players like from Marcelo to Rene Lodi, or even some of like the center backs from David Luiz to Marquinhos. So I feel like it's not going to hurt if we just try out new fresh and blood.
Kevin, do you think it might be time to at least bring in like one or two fresh faces? And if so, we did get a question from a fellow Peruvian Waltz panelist, Christopher Viscardo, about this. Who should be left out of the team in the next call-ups, and who should replace them?
Okay. So, shout out to Viz. Appreciate you. And I think it's a bit complicated. So, since 2018, I think Gareca has tried to get more people, newer players, see what's up, what's in the system, because he's tried out just players that have actually seen minutes on the field, 9 players from what I have counted. A lot of them just didn't pan out. That's not Gareca's fault. But I do think that we have to moderately try to freshen up things. So the starters, I don't think we're just going to wipe anyone out realistically, but maybe people on the bench. I don't think Ramos should be keep getting called up. I understand maybe he was a good presence in the locker room, but I don't think he's going to compete with Santa Maria, Araujo, Zambrano. So I think that's a spot that we could free up. Aldo Corso, unfortunately, I think that was his best that he did against Argentina. That's what his level is now, and it's not enough to compete with Advíncula, who I also am critiquing. So I think looking at, you know, if supposedly Corso is on because he's more defensive, maybe we could try someone that's also defensive. Maybe Araujo could try. Maybe Gianfranco Chavez in an extreme case. You know, I was looking at the Argentina match. We had Carrillo, Cueva, Flores, La Padula, and I'm like, Flores is doing poorly. Who do we have to put in? And all I'm seeing is Polo and Marcos Lopez. Neither of them is really assurance for like a goal to change up a match or something. So that one's a little complicated because we need new wingers to show up. Hopefully by March, some of the wingers we sent to Brazil are performing. And I think La Padula has already come in for Rui Diaz, depending on if for March, depending on if, you know, Farfán is back, La Padula's there. And Rodriguez is doing well in Colombia. Plus, he was an altitude player. I think that could be our strikers. And I think that that's it for now, just to keep it moderate. If you know, some crack just shows up for Peru, by all means, yes. Give him a look.
Exactly. Diego, do you feel it's time for new players? And if so, you know, what would you like to see change?
You know, I'm gonna kind of go off of what my brother was saying, Kevin. I think most of the 11 will not change. Like he said, the bench I think should or at least there should be at least a couple, you know, 2-3 that come into the camp and see what they can offer. The problem is, I think, not that Gareca's the problem, but I think the mentality or the way he's thought about this is the problem. Because in the friendlies, like we mentioned, we should have tested players. We should have tested players just like almost all the other national teams did. And now we're still sitting with our core group, which, I mean, I could play devil's advocate and say, hey, in those friendlies, we played with the core group, and that's why they did so good, got to the World Cup, got to the final of Copa America. Okay, but now they're burnt out. So now what? Now what's the next thing? Do we have options on the bench? I mean, I think Peña is a solid option. We haven't really tried him, right, as a 10. My thing is, we need to play the man that's in form. If Cueva is out of form by then, don't call him up. If Aquino's out of form, don't call him up. If Flores is out of form, don't call him up. We can't just keep calling them because they're big names in Peru. That's just not the way football works. If you're out of form, you're out of form. So we got to go with the next man up. And like Kevin said, there's players in Brazil. There's players that we should try, like Rilca, Green, Tabara. You know, obviously up front, cool. We're going to probably drop Rui Diaz, and you have La Padula, you have Aldair Rodriguez, you have Matias Zuccari, but you still have Jefferson Farfán coming back, and then Paulo Guerrero after that. And then on the wings, Pacheco, Lecaros, we got to look for something.
You also mentioned, Diego, you know, obviously the fact that just players are simply out of form, and, you know, that happens, I guess. But maybe we should potentially look at maybe if there are issues with the system at hand, because it seems like there are holes in it. And it sounded like no matter how many instructions Gareca relay to the players in these games, because one of the benefits of having no fans in the stadium, you can clearly hear what Gareca is saying to players. There was actually a moment in the Chile match where he brought Tapia over to the touchline, and he was telling him exactly how he wanted the midfield to line up, who pushed up, when to push up. And I think at times it worked, but there were also moments where they either just didn't listen or it wasn't working. So I'll ask you this first, Diego, because you've obviously spoken to players and whatnot. Do you think it is a system issue, or do you think it's just the fact that the players just aren't doing well right now in the national team setting? Because at least for their clubs, they are doing well, which kind of makes this more perplexing.
I think it's a bit of both, honestly, because, yeah, some of them are doing well at their clubs while others aren't even playing, or others are off form still, right? And then the system, like I said before, the system we need to change because, one, most teams know or have studied the way Peru played leading up to the World Cup, leading up to that Copa America run. So people know, or teams know how we played, so they know, okay, this is the player that's going to open up this side of that's going to touch this way. So we need to have variants. We need to be able to throw something new at them that they haven't seen. I don't know what that is because I'm not a coach or a tactician, but we need to have options within the game. Obviously, you know, we could start off in our usual 4-2-3-1 or our 4-3-3, but within the game, we have to have an option to change if it's not working, and it needs to be seen, you know, as soon as possible.
Because otherwise, we are definitely not going to be going to Qatar if it doesn't happen. So I'll go around the rest of the table for this last question, guys, just because I think a lot of people are probably saying, oh, well, our qualifying hopes are done. You know, we have like 5 points to make up or whatever it is. With 14 games left, sure, but every qualifier is difficult. to play devil's advocate to that, you just don't know who's going to drop points. Like, look, Peru didn't start well in the last cycle. They made the World Cup. I know a lot of things had to happen in order for that to become a reality, but it's South America. So many things can happen. So, Kevin, I'll start with you on this. What do you think needs to change in order for us to get more points against Bolivia in La Paz, against Venezuela at home, Colombia at home, and Ecuador away? Obviously, those two away games are very daunting in the altitude. But does a change of system need to happen? Do new players need to come in? What do you think needs to happen to maybe change our fortunes?
Going into March, we'll be a little bit more organized because we'll know where we stand. You know, as far as Farfan, Guerrero, basically the leaders of the team, if they're going to be there. I would think Farfan would be there, and I want to hope that that kind of organizes the team a little bit. As far as formations, I'm fine with the 4-3-3 in let's say, La Paz or in Ecuador. But I think at this time, Flores is very out of form. I would keep Carrillo, Cueva, Farfan as the striker if he's an option. If not, go with whoever's in better form between La Padula and Rodriguez. As far as the defense, Zambrano is still going to be out. So I think Santa Maria, he played in Melgar. He has some altitude experience. If he's in form, I'll go with him. If not, Araujo. But I wouldn't risk it again to use a player that doesn't have a lot of minutes when I have another guy that does. Those are my big takeaways. I think we're still in this. It's too soon. We have, 14 matches left? Yeah, I think we still got it. Gareca will get these guys to get working.
All right. And Renato, what do you think needs to change? What do you want to see change in order for us to start picking up more points in March and June ahead of La Copa?
I feel like Gareca's stubbornness to use or to continue using out-of-form players needs to stop because, yes, I understand that you know players like Flores or doing well, but if they are not on form for us, then or just not on form in general, then the next man's have to be up. But I also feel that I wouldn't call this the end of the world just yet because it's still early in the qualifiers. And let's be honest, we also didn't really start out well last cycle, but as we only have 1 out of 12 points currently, it's going to become more and more complicated. And as you mentioned, their next 4 matches, 2 of them are in high altitude. And those matches are never easy unless we can get a miracle that happened against Ecuador and Quito with a Flores golazo, which hopefully maybe someone can replicate that. But lots of work has to be done, and hopefully Gareca can get in huge contact with the boys trying to step their game up and also with the new fresh blood that can come for us in March.
I agree with all of you guys on that. Well, that'll do it for us. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you haven't already, please leave a rating wherever you listen to your podcast. It does help out the show. I am Peter Galindo. You can follow me at GalindoPW on Twitter. You can follow the show at Peru Waltz. Renato, what is your Twitter handle, and do you have a final shout out for this week?
My Twitter handle is Renato_Sun, and I want to give a shout out to almost all of the 32 million, the population of our beautiful homeland, to raise their voices in these difficult times right now, and to show how strong we are as a country.
Well said. Kevin, what is your handle and what is your final shout out for the week?
So you guys can follow me at KMontalvan7. And as far as a shout out, it's really just to everyone out there in Peru that went through everything and all the people that were in all the marches across the world. It looks like everything worked out as well as it could have in this situation. So, arriba Peru.
Absolutely. And Diego, finally, your handle and final shout out for the week.
Well, my handle is D Montalvan. And my shout out, just to piggyback off of Renato and my brother, the Peruvians everywhere in the world, your voice was heard. Now this is just the beginning. Let's keep it up. Fight for what needs to be done in our beautiful motherland. And also a shout out to Indy and Brian, who are our heroes who lost their lives in these protests.
Absolutely. Very well said. This is the Peruvian Waltz team, and we are signing off.
Rubiños en el arco, la defensa es colosal. González Orlando, la torre, Nicolás Fuentes y Chumpitas. Chale Mifrin y Cubillas y el gran Perico León. Bailón y Alberto Gallardo completan la selección.